It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. Let's never forget, third time, third place.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. And we have a blog, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Voice you heard is a man who whose shoulders I'm sure I stepped on many times to get that third place. That's Kobe Slagle. How are you, sir?
Very well. How about yourself?
He's also Kobe Slagle is also bowed out of the World Basketball Classic because
I just need some time away.
Yeah, which is a nice life. We don't want to be like him. So Kobe will be coming in and out because that's what happens here at WFYI, always hustling and bustling. But we do have company, or as we like to say, oh, Roger.
We're not alone.
We're not alone. I was on his show last week, and so to return the favor, he has decided to make a cameo appearance on my show this week. I was on his show last week, and of course, he is a regular guest, therefore he has his own intro, and here it is.
The blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Will someone shut that man up? Never! Never!
That's right, the man who...
It's time to hear what's good,
no,
what's
it's
bad.
No, Mrs. Sosie's already done. But the man who can mix Kevin Smith with 1776, Abdul Kim Shabazz is here. How are you, sir?
Doing good, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I'm very happy to be, you know, here with a fellow bronze winner.
And a fellow bronze person.
What bronze did you get?
Favorite conservative.
Okay.
He's number three with
number
a
three.
With a bullet.
Who was the favorite conservative?
Greg Ballard, Mitch Daniels.
Really? Okay.
That's a tough two to. That's a tough nut to crack.
And both are close personal friends, so I didn't mind, you know, kind of
being the third.
Yeah, being coming in third to those two. So
that's right. And yeah, as we were talking off the air, when you see next month's WFYI newsletter, you'll see a cover. It was on my Facebook page for a while of the WFYI team in victory, and one of the outtakes, which we can't publish, of course, is Abdul peeking during the photo shoot.
I did a photo bomb. Everybody thought I was what's-his-face does the afternoon drive.
No, you are not Jay Johnson's stunt double. Wow.
You can call me Jay, or you can call me Ray, but you does have to call me Johnson.
Welcome to the 70s jokes portion of Film Sociology. We're just going to bypass...
Well, both of us have afros, by the way.
We're going to bypass cooking and sports and go right into 40-year-old jokes.
The 70s jokes portion of the show has kind of been on a hiatus for a while.
That's true.
Like.
You know why? Those jokes were from a different time.
Different time, different jokes.
Now the only 40-year-old jokes are us. Ta-da!
Ta-da! And it's funny, we mentioned 1776, September 4th through the 3rd at Buskirk Trumley Theater down in Bloomington. Cardinal Stage Company is doing 1776.
Well, they're doing something American in the People's Republic of Monroe County.
bring your passport. So because of that, Abdul, I have to ask, is your cameo role in this production?
My favorite cameo role in 1776 is when they're, you know, talking about the Declaration of Independence and all the back and forth. The messenger who comes in, that was me. And so one time I just threw this line out during rehearsal, and the director was like, no. So I go to Thomas Jefferson and say, oh, by the way, mom says bring home a couple of eggs and some milk.
Thank you, history buffs. You know?
And the director's jaw just drops to the floor. Stop! Stop! No! No!
Not happening.
I told you we should have cast him as Benjamin Banneker. Yeah, I'm the first one to die in the Revolutionary War scene. Thanks, dude. I appreciate it. I'm sorry, that's Christmas Addicts. I get all my 1700s black people mixed up. Yeah.
Oh, good. We're at the 1700s portion, black people portion of film sociology.
Wait, no, between all the powdered wigs and roots, I can't keep track of. I just walked out with a fiddle and, you know, just went to town.
The opinions you hear on film sociology or Abdul Kim Shabazz reflect him and him only. Okay. Hey, that's good. So, yeah, there
you go. Expecting that night, I know how it feels.
There you go, Cardinal Stage. There's some publicity. September 4th through the 13th down in Bloomington. We'll be in the front row, arms crossed. So, it is August, and apparently, depending on, I guess, kids are in school. My daughter and partner.
Some of them are.
Yeah, my daughter and partner, HW, started this week. I think some schools in Indy started last week. So, I guess it's officially the end of
Yeah, my niece says they went back this week, so.
And so I want to start with, before we get into Abdul's take on Guardians of the Galaxy. And by the way, shameless plug, and don't call, Tuesday at 1 o'clock on No Limits, which you can hear Tuesdays at 1 on WFYI. I'll be on as a guest along with Nuvo's Ed Johnson Ott talking about the summer of film and what to look forward to for grown-up movie season.
Ah, you'll be talking with my good friend and colleague, John Kroll.
John Kroll, yes.
Yes, he is the publisher and editor of thestatehousefile.com, and I am one of his contributing columnists.
Yes, he is. Yes, you are.
Yes, I am, because I'm always the one who's right, both politically speaking and literally.
So don't try calling up and calling his poser.
Hello, I have a question about the closing scene.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Strangelove is calling. Hi, you're on No Limits.
Yes, I thought in Captain America Winter Soldier, the Hydra characters did not get the type of publicity that they should have received.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ivan Dixon.
There's only a handful. By the way, recently.
He died. Actually, check Ivan Dixon's though a bit. He passed a while back, but yeah. he was the African American gentleman from Hogan's Heroes who could strangely enough sound like the Fuhrer better than anybody else in.
And for some strange reason, had an afro in a 1942 German prison camp.
Well, if you look at westerns from the 60s, like for example, Glenn Campbell in True Grit, yeah, that's not a Western haircut.
No, it's
so. Do we have an obit from Ivan Dixon?
Yes, we do. I've got 1931 to 2008.
So it's been a while.
Yeah,
been a while. But so you've picked up the slack for.
The beatings will continue until morale improves.
And Werner Kuttner buys it. Anyway, opening in theaters today is a film, of course, that screams public radio. But I went to see it anyway. It's called the 100-Foot Journey, and this is directed by Lasse Hallström.
Is that the movie with Helen Mirren and
yes.
Two other people?
Dame Helen Mirren and actors not quite as dark as you. But it's set in the south of France, and we have a family from India that have moved there to open a restaurant. They happen to open a restaurant across from the famed French restaurant run by Dame Helen Mirren. And guess what? They don't like each other right away.
And I bet they learn to like each other.
I bet they do. You know what? Life lessons are learned. Mm-hmm. Life things and character things.
Character things.
Not just plot things happen here.
So eventually the curry and the crepes all get together.
That sounds like West Side Story. So yeah, there is that because the young man has a cooking style of his own, and it's old versus new, it's France versus India, it's not the World Cup, but it's also directed by Lasse Hallström, who gave us films like My Life is a Dog, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Cider House Rules, and lately has been, for some reason, this is a man that has not one but two Nicholas Sparks novels under his belt. He did Safe Haven and he did Dear John. This is considerably better than that.
Yeah, because when I saw them doing the previews, I was like, okay.
Well, this is what we would call, I guess, in the cooking world, a trifle. But it's a well-made trifle.
Okay,
it's,
but it wouldn't be called My Hood Trifle-Lynn?
No, it's not Trifle-Lynn. And my wife is not Trifle-Lynn.
Okay, but at what part in the 100-Foot Journey does Helen Mirren take out the big subatomic machine
gun? No, that's Red. That's, you have a different movie. She pulls out a ladle. And
ladle.
We made you out of clay. But this is a film, if you know right away, and I think some people will get this and some people won't, but this is a kind of a culinary fairy tale. And I mean, there are moments in the film where you see a wide shot of the two restaurants across from each other, and then you look in the background and you look down, there's valley, and it's the small French village. And it just looks like something out of a picture book. There's the fireworks from Bastille Day and other holidays that pop up. I mean, it is a fairy tale. Some people will say it's schlocky, it's schmaltzy. But if you know going in that, yeah, rights will be wronged, ideas will be changed, people will get along. It's
butter will be melted.
Butter will be melted. Yes, butter will be melted. Sauce will be poured.
there will be blood.
Also great film. Not a drive-in double feature. I don't think 100-foot journey. Of course, we've joked about I want to have the art house drive-in. So actually, that would work there.
Oh God, I don't have the strength.
But I don't think Seven Samurai and Magnificent Seven, that would be our drive-in.
Yeah.
But anyway, but yeah, there's nothing groundbreaking about the material, but it's still fun to watch. And yeah, Helen Mirren's quite good, and we also have the actor who plays the dad, who of course is the patriarch of the family, and doesn't like Helen Mirren. You know where that's going. But it's
we're gonna have dating.
Maybe. we have spoiler alerts here at Film Sociology. Remember, Rosebud was a sled.
Oh, God, yeah.
But it's character actor Om Puri, who a lot of folks know from Gandhi. He was in City of Joy.
Was he the dad in Big Bang Theory?
He was not the dad in Big Bang Theory. He was in Ghosts in the Darkness. He was in Wolf.
Did he play Poppy?
He was
Seinfeld?
Not. I'm getting to the film that you will know him from, sir. Be patient. City of Joy, that was the bad film where we had to accept Patrick Swayze as a doctor, and then he travels to India. But he played President Zia in Charlie Wilson's War.
Huh. See, okay.
I
remember him.
Yeah, that guy. He's in it. He's quite good. You have
he did not kill Benazir Bhutto.
Abdul, also your home for Charlie Wilson war information. Please do not do Philip Seymour Hoffman's monologue. You can't.
I got him on tape.
I learned Finnish. So yeah, it's a fun couple of hours, and of course, Kobe, as you know, because there's cooking involved, the cooking sequences look great. Mm-hmm. You know, probably the finest cinematic experience watching an omelet being made. In
since Mrs. Doubtfire.
Gonna
better than that.
I tell you this, I'm not a cook.
So yeah, it is.
I'm sorry, but watch a lot of Richard Nixon Watergate 40th anniversary.
We're gonna get to that. I want to get to that in a little bit. But yeah, it is. It's a lightweight, fun film, even though it brings absolutely nothing new to the table. It's like Jersey Boys. But yeah, it's worth checking out, and it's going to be a change of pace from, you know, the horror movies that your wife's going to want to drag you to, and
God,
yes, other started. Things. So it was either this or it was either Turtles. I picked Helen Mirren. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, but here's a question on Turtles.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years ago, yeah. So what's the point?
Why
do we need to do this again?
You know, because Mall America, short attention span, apparently.
I remember this the first time around.
It's kind of like the Godzilla thing. I mean, sometimes it works for best because all you're hoping for is it's better than hopefully it's better than the last one. What's the rat guy's name?
The master, not Master Shredder. Shredder's like the bad
adversary.
Guy.
We are old. We forgot.
I know, but I didn't watch it that much when it was on the first time.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I mean, really, all it was just a cheesy marketing toy to sell toys.
If anything else, I just wanted to see April in human form, and it's close. It's Megan Fox. So you mentioned earlier this week, and I talked about this on Facebook. This week is the 40th anniversary, of course, of Nixon's resignation. And a couple things. One, if you go to Nuvo this week and you can read Ed Jensenat's review of Get On Up, which was the biopic on James Brown. And he wrote, this is the first time he watched a biopic and he liked the subject less by the end of the film. And I almost wanted to, I have not talked to him yet about this directly. I was like, what about Nixon? Because you, sir, are a big fan of Oliver Stone's Nixon.
Yes.
Which I am as well, because it treats Nixon, played by Anthony Hopkins, like he's a Shakespearean tragedy figure, like he's King Lear, President Lear, I guess. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, because like I said, it's the 40th anniversary of Watergate and the resignation and all that stuff has kind of sort of come together all at one time. And on Netflix, I've been watching The American Experience of all the Nixon things. And there's,
oh, yeah. There's Dick Cavett's Nixon, which is I'm going to be on PBS.
Yeah, and then there's the other – there was actually a really good documentary, which you would appreciate, about Nixon, but it was all the home video footage, home films.
Right.
Taken by, like, Ehrlichman, Halderman.
That's going to be a fun cookout.
Oh, yeah, and all those guys, but sort of the dialogue from the tape sort of superimposed.
Nice.
Over everything.
Yes.
And there's this one scene, which – you always kind of knew about it, but it's interesting to have them say it. Like, when they talk about Henry Kissinger at a dinner,
mm-hmm.
it was like, oh, we've got to keep Henry away from these beautiful young ladies.
Yes,
you know?
So this is a dude who dated Jill St. John, among others.
Like, yeah. It's one thing for Henry to be a swinger out there in New York or L.A., but you can't be doing that here in D.C., Washington. You can't be doing that.
Stay out of the bathhouses, President Nixon.
I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Because you see the Oliver Stone documentary, but then you wonder how much of it is real.
Right, and you have Paul Sorvino. And
yeah, how does a fat man get so many girls?
Power.
The greatest aphrodisiac, Mr. Plyman.
Exactly. And, of course, I always think of Dan Aykroyd as Nixon, where he's looking at the portrait of Lincoln. He says, well, Abe, you were lucky.
They shot you.
And Belushi's playing Kissinger. And there's other stuff we can't. But I watched All the President's Men. For the first time in many, many years, and still as riveting as it was when it came out in 1975. That's the other thing. People talk about when United 93 came out, I think it was 2005. That's 4 years, almost 4 years after 9/11. And, you know, there was debate on was it too soon, was it not soon enough, that sort of thing. But also, think about the biggest political scandal you can imagine, and what, a year after the fact, there's a film made about it. I mean, that's a pretty quick turnaround.
And it's interesting because last year, back in 2012, Bob Woodward and Bernstein were actually here in Indianapolis.
Yes, they were.
For the Indiana Chamber of Commerce annual fall dinner. And so I actually got to interview the two of them.
And are they tired of talking about this?
Actually, no.
They said the same thing this week on BBC.
Because it was interesting because what I asked them was, not so much about the whole Watergate thing, but I said, do you think something like a Watergate could happen today in the 21st century? And they were like, no.
Nope.
That would be impossible.
Too much. Too much paperwork, too much digital.
Too much paperwork, too much digital, you know, too much surveillance. I mean, camera phones, cell phones, you know, Facebook, Twitter, social media.
Somebody's going to do something.
Is going to do something would have said something.
Now, right.
There's no way you could have done that, you know, today. Now, back then,
when you had 4 channels, 3 channels,
yeah.
You got your news at this particular hour, you got it this way, your biggest technology was reel to reel as far as recording stuff.
And the old teletype.
Correct.
Richard Nixon resigns.
Yeah, that great moment at the end of the film. But just the bare bones as far as basic reporting, yes, not all journalists look like Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, but they do talk like Jason Robards and Jack Ward.
Yes, they do.
Which we can't really get into here, but Robards is great in that.
As Ben Bradley.
And yes, Ben Bradley. And, of course, Hal Holbrook is Deep Throat. And just a riveting thriller with no guns, no weapons. Just the scene where he's typing when they know that the apartment is bugged. Scary stuff. And it's a famous picture of Hoffman and Redford at the typewriter together.
And the funny thing is, what people forget is, with Watergate, at first, it was no big deal.
Right.
Nobody.
They kept on it. This is like 1972.
It starts in 1972, but it goes on for a whole
2 years.
2 years.
Over 2 years.
Yeah, because it goes through the 1972 election, doesn't really pop up, and then about 73 is when all the stuff really starts to...
The ball starts to roll. And yeah, I think obviously in today's news cycle, that would happen a lot faster.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Of course, you'd have somebody run around yelling Benghazi all the time.
That doesn't happen. Oh, that's Facebook. Hi.
Yeah.
But there was something I realized while watching the film the other night, and this is a stickler with me. In 1975, All the President's Men received a PG rating. Because if you really think of it, there's really nothing, according to the Motion Picture Association of America, a flawed constitution since 1968. The only thing you can cite that film for is language.
Yeah.
If you think about it, there's no violence, no sex, no drug use. It's, and of course nowadays when there is a rating, they tell you why it got that rating. And you know, I guess if anything, thematic events. whatever the hell that
means.
But
I would argue, I'd give it a PG rating because if you're bringing your six-year-old...
You're an idiot. Unless you have a six-year-old working the school paper.
Yeah.
The elementary times.
You're surely, yeah.
As I. But I counted, there are 8 F-bombs in All the President's Men. Jack Warden says it. I think Redford does it a couple of times. Ben Bradley says it a few times. So 8. Now, over the last couple decades, it's been, and especially after PG-13 came about in 1984, the unofficial rule has been you get away with 1, maybe 2, and you can keep a PG-13 rating. But as I wrote on Facebook, I think the MPAA, because of watching All the President's Men again, I think the MPAA owes a big effing apology to Once, to The King's Speech, and to another number of other films. And I'm not even saying Kevin Smith. That's a whole different ball of wax. But films that really got the rating because of words. I got a problem with that.
Yeah, and I will give you that. I mean, because...
King's Speech, there's nothing objectionable to it. Same thing with Once. Nothing.
I mean, and plus the kids always had a problem with giving movies a higher, more adult rating because of language.
They've heard it. I'm sorry, they've heard it. My kid has heard it. Your kid has heard it. If they haven't heard it, congratulations.
And when I get home tonight, I'm probably going
to
hear it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Where the blank and blank, yo, black blank and blank man.
So I have a higher tolerance for that. I can't wait to hear the calls from some of our listeners and some of yours. But that's not an issue with me.
Well, what I always found interesting, I think I told you about it. It was when my wife and I went to go see. It was a stupid movie with Vin Diesel. It was like the third one of those pitch black.
Riddick, one of the Chronicles of Riddick.
Riddick 12, Riddick Bowes.
Still Riddick. It's not Riddick Bowes.
And we're there at this stupid movie, which I didn't want to go see, but my wife
was. Oh, so it's your wife's pick.
Yeah, and there's like this family in front of us. I think I told you the mom, dad, 2 girls, and the son.
And how old are the kids?
Kind of like that early teen, late adolescence, looked like between 14 and 12.
So they're older than Bebe's kids.
Yeah, not Bebe's kids. So the violent scene comes up where the axe in the head and decapitation, and it's no big deal. The topless women show up, and the mother's like telling the 12-year-old, turn your head. Don't look at that.
Yeah, that's
like,
the other.
I'm like, seriously? Really?
Well, that's the old George Carlin bit of I'd rather watch 2 people making love than 2 people trying to kill.
Yeah.
And you can go on YouTube and hear this or pick up the album of substituting the word for the word kill.
Yeah.
And all those movie cliches. Yeah, it's parents are weird.
I was like, really? You took your kid to this?
Oh, but this is where you draw the line.
Yeah.
Decapitation is fine. Bare breast, no.
Bare breast and 2 women kissing each other, that's horrible and evil, but the guy basically taking the axe and hitting the guy between the legs and split him in half, we're good for that. But of course, I will, and I'll do fairness, I didn't know whether the woman was talking to her son or her husband.
Yeah, because she had an extra child there. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Go check out those documentaries as well as All the President's Men. I'm going to plow through quickly what's new on DVD and Blu-ray because there's not a whole lot. I should say Divergent is out, and my daughter enjoyed it, but she's into Hunger Games and Divergent and the dystopian.
Oh, this dystopian
thing,
future,
going to hell in a handbag
and whatever.
I've
been there, done that.
Yeah, I hate to say if it is true. Also, Need for Speed, which I guess I didn't realize was a film based on a video game.
Okay.
Ed Johnson not told me about that. God's Not Dead. You're not going to have a punchline for you.
But I wish I was after watching this film.
Thank you, Mr. Shalit. And this is something that I'm sure Mrs. Shabazz might inquire about. And I know Kobe will not see the horror film Oculus.
Okay. Help me out here.
You know, it's that one with the abandoned creepy house and the dark poster and the
person in the mirror.
And the fast cuts.
Yeah, the person washes their face.
And you look up.
And then you wash your face again. And then you see the thing. And there's the 2 hands that are clapping out of nowhere. Is it that one?
It could be that. It could be the one with the really innocent-sounding music that has an ominous, creepy tone, and you won't be able to hear the song the same way again.
Or it might be the one where the body is climbing up the wall backwards like a spider, and then turns his head and sticks his tongue out.
It could be that.
Is it that one?
It could be that. It could be, yeah. And there's just enough fast-cutting and just enough bodily fluid that it keeps it from being an R rating. So you get a PG-13 horror film, which I know your favorites. It's like sugar-free ice cream.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, at least that's got Splenda in it. Here's a thought. How about we just play Tiptoe Through the Tulips as we're killing everybody?
Yeah, let's take an innocent song and just creep it the hell out. So that's also out on DVD and Blu-ray.
But does Oculus have eight arms, I guess?
Or is it Alfred Molina?
Oh, God.
Wrong Doc Ock.
Oh, by the way, I did actually sit through 10 minutes of Sharknado 2.
I still have it in DVR. Any fun? Did you have cocktails before watching
it? Let's put it this way. I will at least give them credit. They do not pretend to be anything other than stupid.
And if you Marketplace Morning Report, I think you can go to Marketplace's website. They did an interview with the producers on I think it was Wednesday or Thursday. But yeah, they're basically working from hand to mouth from film. So whatever Sharknado 2 makes, that will make the next one. That will make, I don't know. Yeah, they might make Octopulous. So. Yeah, they know exactly that they're making a film called Atlantic Rim.
Yeah.
So is it that, and you should check out the Riff Trax version of that. They are Riff Trax, you know, the guys from Mr. Science, they are doing the bad 90s version of Godzilla.
Wow.
That would be more
that would probably be more fun to
watch. That would be more fun. So go to Fathom Events, check out Riff Trax to find out when that exactly will be.
And I
want to
say,
a replay.
On Netflix, they have the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version of Gamera, the flying turtle.
Or Gamera, if you're from the region. Yes, yeah. He is neat. He is neat. He is turtle meat. Another old title out on DVD Blu-ray. I don't think I've ever asked you about this. Do you remember from 1974 Brian De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise?
No.
The kind of rock and roll version of Phantom of the Opera with Paul Williams and Jessica Harper.
I remember Phantom of the Mall.
No, this is before that. This is what...
The Kiss versus the Phantom.
That's really bad. That's really bad. Gene Simmons compares it to Lawrence of Arabia, but he's Gene Simmons. With a G, not a J, not the actress. But it is... So it's Faust, it's Phantom of the Opera, but it's kind of 70s... deliberately chintzy rock and roll. That is out on Blu-ray. It's got a slew of extras. And this is one of Brian De Palma's early films. This is the one I think he did after Sisters and before Carrie.
Okay.
So it's very stylized, but very cool.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of films.
Yes, sir.
The lovely Mrs. Shabazz, whom you are quite acquainted with.
Yes, one of my two are two of my favorite patients. I am Dr. Soci, film therapist.
She might actually be calling you soon.
Uh-oh.
Because she has never seen South Park's Bigger, Longer, Uncut.
You showed her a cut of that, right? You showed her a musical number. What is the broadcast version of that?
Well, this was the... She was sort of half asleep, half awake, and I'm flipping the channels.
And that came on?
And that was on, like, HBO, like, 12 or whatever.
Sure.
And so I left it there, and she's like, what is this? I'm like, oh, you'll see.
Oh, God. And where did it get to?
It started off with the part right before they put the V-chip in the Cartman's head.
Right.
So he sings a song about Kyle's mom. You've ever met my friend Kyle's mom? She's the biggest, you know what, in the whole wide world.
Uh-huh.
And then after like all the kids around the world, when they do the little Asian thing, and then the African with the...
Which, by the way, not an original idea. There was the, and Mr. Science Theater made fun of it, the film Santa Claus. That's the Mexican film where Santa fights the devil, and he's at a keyboard, and you can see Christmas celebrated in Africa and South America and Asia, and yeah.
Hey, but great films always steal from...
Right.
Everybody.
So
and so the lovely Mrs. Shabazz, her jaw drops to the floor.
Like a Tex Avery cartoon.
Yeah, because she can't believe that. And then when we finally get to the Satan somewhere up there.
The power ballad with
the power ballad.
His lover, Saddam. And
hey, Satan, come out of here. And then he takes a little,
yeah. everybody who watched the South Park knows exactly what
we're talking about.
Well,
she told me she was offended. I was like, oh, woman, please. Everybody was back in
How many times has she said that in your marriage?
God. wouldn't imagine she said it.
But she's still with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like 5 years. Yeah. I won the pool.
So I'm going to have to explain. So I will say this because the lovely Miss Sosi, when I didn't drag her to that one. She gets South Park more than other juvenile things I have inflicted on her in the past. But what was fun about it, watching my wife watch it, was she could name the musical genre that they were, the specific musical they were making fun of. That's Les Mis, that's Rodgers and Hammerstein, that's this, that's that.
Yeah.
So she was banging those. I'm sure you were as well. Oh, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, like the whole Les Mis thing.
Exactly. Le Resistance. Okay, so I'll be, I cannot wait to get a text from her.
So I just want to warn you, she'll be giving you a call.
That's good, because it's usually, most of the time it's you calling for help, so I will keep the corduroy jacket on display. Since you are here, just a reminder, Saturday nights on MeTV, which is great time-killing television, because on Saturday nights you can see the original Batman, Star Trek,
Wonder Woman.
Mrs. Sosie's not watching that. And then, of course, our guy,
Svengoolie.
And then after Svengoolie's Lost in Space. But tomorrow night at 10 o'clock on MeTV on Svengoolie, Curse of the Undead, A Vampire in the West.
Yes. I've seen it because he wears all black.
Yes, and he's
I can't remember how it ends, but I know there's one scene where he's like at the church and there's like the cross and the shadow
Folks, think of every, and this is probably, I want to say, like mid-50s maybe, so, and I could just see the boys in development of what particular, I think it was Universal that is, I can imagine like the right stuff, the guy running down the hallway going, I got it! A vampire movie in the Old West! And they went, perfect, they can use this set that we use for Rawhide and every other Western we've shot.
We need another movie, then we need to do it on the cheap.
And we're going to put two genres in one picture. And because I remember in the 60s there was, I think it was Jesse James meets Frankenstein's Daughter with John Carradine. Of course, John Carradine was in every other film in the 1960s.
Of course, we called it Blackula, where we come from.
Oh, we love Blackula. We are pro-Blackula here at Film Sociology.
That's because we love William Marshall.
We do love William Marshall.
I was a Shakespearean actor. This is what I get. I'm playing a black vampire.
But he treated it like King Lear.
Yes, he did.
That was awesome.
My son works. Whoops, sorry.
So anyway, Curse of the Undead tomorrow night at 10 o'clock on MeTV. That's going to be a lot of fun. Oh, yeah. Now, there's also a company called the Film Movement. I've talked about them in the past. It's basically a movie of the month club. You get a DVD of a short, of a full-length feature, and a short, and a couple of feature documentaries, interviews, what have you. And
so that's where you get all your movies with the clown.
It's not
playing
all
death
the
with
clowns.
Chess.
It's not, yes, and playing chess with death. But it's a film called The Auction, which was shot, a French-Canadian film. No, they don't do the French Canada from the Wizard of Oz episode of South Park. But it's set in northern Quebec, and you have it's a farmer who's got two daughters. They are grown. He is divorced. The children are out of the house, and the oldest child has financial issues, and it's the father basically having to sell the farm. That's a very simple
He's living,
but it's a very simple story with beautiful footage of northern Quebec, and it's reminiscent of. Do you remember in the summer / fall of 1984, there were three farming dramas? Sally Field, who won Best Actress for Places of the Heart, Jessica Lange and Sam Shepard in Country, and Sissy Spacek with everyone's favorite Southern actor, Mel Gibson, in The River. And it had that feel to it. As far it's a slow-paced film, but it's not a slow film. And it's Gabriel Arcand. Gets the lead name, Gabe Akron. No, because he still works in Canada. And it's written and directed by Sebastian Pilote, and it's a quiet, powerful drama. And you know, we've talked before about the plight of the farmer. I mean, there are no days off. It's hard to get a farmer.
Yeah, but of course you just double your income by installing a second mailbox too. So
he also forms a union and drives him out of business. Anyway, it's a very powerful film. Go check it out. It's very good. And compared to what else is new on DVD and Blu-ray this week,
nothing.
Not a lot. So, the other thing while you're here, Abdul, is I wanted to get your take on Guardians of the Galaxy? Because I don't know how much you are Mr. Comic Book.
Yes.
And you make fun of the people who cash their checks at the comic book shop. We call them the Watchmen crowd. I wanted your take on Guardians of the Galaxy.
I was, when I walked in and saw Guardians of the Galaxy, first thing was, as a longtime superhero dork, I was already familiar, you know, with the people, already familiar with the characters. However, the Guardians of the Galaxy folk crowd that you see in the movie are not necessarily the original Guardians of the Galaxy. They're more sort of the most updated Marvel version. It's like, okay, fine, whatever, I'm cool. We'll just kind of check it out and go from there. What I had to do for me was not take the movie so literally, being familiar with the genre, familiar with that whole part of the Marvel outer space universe. I had to sort of, you know, suspend a certain amount of belief in reality. But it was funny, hilarious, action scenes were great. The parts where it started to get a little slow, they sped it up. It's like they kind of caught on, they were moving slow, so they kind of got a little bit faster, a little bit quick. And the typical closing Marvel scene at the end of the credit roll, you had two groups of people in the movie theater. One group of people was like, huh? And then the rest of us were like,
who survived the 80s?
So there was that.
So before we rebut, I love the show because sometimes we have a rotating door of guests. And joining us in, and I don't have the sound set up, but Mike Perry, Lawrence of Arabia.
So, okay, we can stop it right there.
Fine, nobody wants to. How are you, sir?
I'm awake.
You, that's good. We appreciate that.
Which I wasn't during much of Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm afraid.
I liked it.
I loved it, what I saw of it.
So I'll ask you guys, since you're both, I said originally that, like, Star Wars was an homage to the cliffhanger, the weekly serial, the Western. This felt like, instead of Ocean's 11, Space 5. This is the ragtag group of misfits that have to work together. Maybe they don't like each other, especially when Batista refers to Zoe as the green whore. which, by the way, Batista, the funniest thing in the film. This is a man that takes everything at its literal sense. it's above me. No, it isn't. Or things like that. But I mean, it's kind of reminiscent of a 60s, 70s caper movie where everybody has to. Dirty Dozen, Ocean's 11, Kelly's Heroes. That's the feel I had for it. And that made it a lot of fun.
They put a lot of work into his dialogue, I thought, because it was so far removed from everyone else's dialogue. It was almost, I don't want to say Shakespearean, but it was kind of more formal, his manner of speech.
He's a character who doesn't get metaphor or sarcasm. He takes everything literally.
You mean like people that follow you on Facebook
and
Twitter, Abdul?
Except they're not green and they're not cool.
They don't look like Zoe Saldana.
No, they don't. Yeah. Which more of them kind of did.
Yes, remember, guys, she's green in this one for those who didn't get enough of her being blue.
Or black and Star Trek. It's like black, now she's blue, now she's green.
And all we can say, this is the only time we can say this, and we're going to move on. Jackson Pollock.
Yep.
There you go. So, but yeah, the cookie at the end of the film, it brought a little bit, and we're not going to give it away, but it brought a little bit of closure for some of us who had to suffer through a high-profile 1980-something Spielberg's producing it, and it was a good time.
And for me, it didn't bring closure. All it did was just rip open old wounds is what it did.
Oh,
for
gosh.
Me.
You know what, Abdul? It's not your fault.
I was like, what?
It's
seriously
not your
We are
fault.
Not doing this again. My wife was like, what are you talking about?
It is not
It's like, we'll have this discussion
fault.
When we get in the car. You don't understand, dear.
It's
it was
not
like a Vietnam flashback. Like, oh, my God, that? We fought them off the horse and just came over and over and over.
It's not your fault.
We drained four phasers and the gang still came over the wall.
Ah, jeez. So.
It's about that time.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Abdul Hakim Shabazz has radio stuff to do. You can hear
him
down
the aisle.
Well,
actually, I got television stuff to do.
Then radio stuff. But no, I appreciate you coming and hanging out.
Oh, no, not a problem. Like I said, I just wish I had paid attention to my telephone as opposed to trying to invade Cuba at the time.
Abdul Hakim Shabazz, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
Can a brother invade Cuba with his army?
We're still trying to get booze on Sundays, yet alone anything from Cuba. My God.
Wow, they still put movie listings in the newspaper? Wow.
They still do. And oh, well, look at this. Apparently, Deep Sea Challenge 3D, James Cameron's new film, it's opening. It's in 3D. Is it shorter than Avatar?
It would almost have to be, wouldn't it?
All I know is wherever you people go, you're always causing trouble.
What do you mean? You're right. The blame white people theory of Avatar.
Oh, my God. Avatar is so typical of European white imperialism. Oh, my God. You people can't even go to Blue Planet. Leave people alone. Mind their own business. You know, just trying to come, you know, something, take the blue people stuff. And then you got to wear oxygen, man. Can't even breathe the air because the planet don't like you.
Well, see, I just see that as dedication.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, next weekend, Abdul-Hakim Shabazz will be doing his one-man version.
Malcolm the 10th.
I was thinking District 9, but that's all right. Thanks, Abdul.
Because 10 would be too brutal.
This is his version of dropping the mic and going, so.
District X.
Thanks, Abdul.
All right.
Yeah,
take care.
Yep. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. It's funny, we're in a studio that says on air, and that's usually for a sign for people to not open the door, but that's kind of gone out the window today. Abdul-Hakim Shabazz was here, now he's gone, and Mike Perry is here, and he's here to stay, and Kobe's here, and I'm here, and it's revolving door week here at Film Sociology, and that's all right. So there's a couple other notes I want to talk to before we chat with Mike. We also have dead people we like. We also go into the archives for the first time in a while. Also, don't forget, tomorrow night at the Toby Theater at the IMA is the Indianapolis 48-hour film project screening.
Yes.
That's from 6 to 10. And you can go to imamuseum.org for more information. You can check out the Not Nouveau today and see an article about that.
I have some friends who made a film, Go Carol Wagner. Bring one home.
To me. And it's funny because my wife was on standby for a particular film project. So, yeah, but this is a fun filmmaker and actors and designers and everybody getting together and doing kind of the old Mickey Judy thing in 48 hours. So that is happening tomorrow night at the IMA. As we alluded to earlier, James Cameron has a new film called Deep Sea Challenge 3D. We talked about Guardians of the Galaxy. So Mike Perry's going to try to check it out again.
Yes.
It'll be fine. It happens. Yeah, you were tired.
I was tired. But I missed the meatier part of the movie. I fell, apparently, according to my friend, fell asleep right after the opening credits.
So you missed, woke back
up after the prison break, and then I fell asleep later during the climactic battle sequence. So I need to go catch up.
And you need ketchup.
And I need ketchup.
That's, you know what? It's funny. Last time you were here, I think this spawned an idea. Kobe, have you ever fallen asleep during a movie?
In theater, no.
Yes. Well, you're young and spry, and you're full of energy and life, unlike us old guys.
Yes. Getting old really bites.
Maybe if you were bit, you would have stayed awake.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not a thing. Go to my page, Matthew Soci, or at Matthew Soci on Twitter.
Movies you fell asleep to,
and not because it was boring, but because you were tired.
Right.
It happens. It happens all the time. You have a limit. It's like Gina says. You have a limited amount of time.
Be cool.
Don't fall asleep. I always remember I was 10, and I grew up in Flint, Michigan, and we had the Grand Blanc a twin cinema in Grand Blanc, Michigan. And I remember Siskel and Ebert on sneak previews raved about this film, and it was actually coming to Flint. Usually we had to travel down to Detroit to go see art and foreign films.
Right.
And it was Akira Kurosawa's Kagamusha. The Shadow Warrior, where a kind of a man poses as an emperor anyway, basic story. But my I really wanted to see it, and my dad wanted to see it. My dad is a retired surgeon, and he had a rough day at the operating table. And he went to see it, and he basically paid money to entertain me and to take a nap. It happens.
It does happen. But, man, I sat through, you know, the Tree of Life with my eyes wide open. But I fall asleep during a Marvel movie?
Yeah.
It's just like, not right somewhere.
Maybe you need maybe the Transformers movie will lull you to sleep. But it happens. So I think, yeah, next week, because I know next week, Matt Tully from the Indianapolis Star. He's a good sport, if I call it not Nouveau. But he's going to be on the show next week because next week, the 16th, August 16th, will mark the anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley. And we are going to break down the movies of Elvis Presley, all 32 of them.
Half of them have the word Hawaii in the title, don't they?
It feels like that.
Half of them have the word Elvis in the title.
They all have Elvis in the time. No, but this is one because I know he has seen every single Elvis film. I have seen every single Elvis film. Thanks, Mom. And and because of that, my daughter has seen about half of the Elvis film. So, but one of the things I will talk about on next week's show is, yes, Elvis is an entertainment icon, and you know, Elvis Presley still makes money today. Well, somebody else makes it, but as far as world famous entertainment figures in history, but I think that being said, he's also one of the great what could have beens. You know, what if he was able to tour outside the United States? What if he gained more control of his career? What if Colonel Parker didn't dictate everything? You know, what if he didn't have to play 250 gigs a year between 1969 and 1977? And what if you took out a third of the movies he made? So I'm going to break down some of the films that could probably go away from the list, and they're not the always obvious choices, and I'll explain why on next week's show. So anyway, do you have a favorite Elvis movie, Mike Ferry?
I can't remember the name of it.
I probably know it.
But I was fond of the one with the nuns and Mary Tyler Moore.
That's Change of Habit. Okay. That was his last film.
I enjoyed that one.
Yes,
and Blue Hawaii is good.
Blue Hawaii is quite good.
Yeah.
And of course, remember who his mother was in that film?
Your mom.
Shut up. It was not. No. I'm sorry. That's a bro joke right there. Nope.
No, I don't.
Angela Lansbury.
Oh.
So she was 9. So she was 9 years old when she had Elvis Presley and Lawrence Harvey in the Manchurian Candidate.
She was only like a few years older than Lawrence Harvey.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. I love cinematic gene pools.
Yes.
And by the way, Kobe, shut up. Oh, by the way.
Was not.
And see the Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah, you should see the original Manchurian Candidate. By the way, you'll appreciate this, Kobe. Emma, now 7th grader, now 12, now uses the term with me. You mad, bro?
Bro, do you even lift?
So anyway, we'll talk more Elvis on next week's show. Also in theaters today, and I'm really happy that it's now available in 5 theaters. What? What are you?
I'm just imagining Emma just coming up. You mad, bro? What's wrong,
mad, bro? Well, she does it ironically now. So when I wake her in the morning, I'm like, you wake, bro? You up, bro? You hungry, bro? So, once again, my wife has 2 children. So, but the Richard Linklater film Boyhood is now expanded to 5 theaters here
and
in
5
Indianapolis.
Hours.
It's not 5 hours. It doesn't feel like 5 hours, but it was at Keystone Art Cinemas for 2 screens. I think it's now down to 1, but it is expanded. I got to see it last week. This is the Richard Linklater film that spans 12 years with a boy, his older sister, played by the filmmaker's daughter, a divorced couple, played by Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke. And what they did was they filmed maybe 3 days a year until the project was finished. One, that is amazing commitment to this project. Right. If you go to Fresh Air's archives, you can hear the interview with Richard Linklater. It's really cool about how this was made. And this is a guy who, you know, with Ethan Hawke made the Before trilogy with he and Julie Delpy. But you also have a really solid, realistic portrayal of adolescence in a 2-household family, and all of the characters, even the sister but they all have an arc. They all have a storyline. They all change. And the young boy who is, I can't remember if it's his first film or one of his first films, but one of the best representations of a teenager in cinema. It's not a movie kid. It's not a Disney kid. We literally get to watch this kid grow up in a span of 2 hours and 45 minutes. And I wouldn't, this is one of those few films I wouldn't mind if it were longer, but it doesn't drag at all. And it's fun to see the cuts when it's this age to that age. Ethan Hawke, of course, plays the kind of the man child, and you do eventually see him grow up. You know, first he has a GTO, and then, well, life choice. Life things happen, Kobe. That's big. That's the documentary version of plot things happening.
And it happens the older you get. I just made a choice between, a Nissan SUV and a Chrysler Sebring hardtop convertible.
With Corinthian leather.
And I so wanted the convertible.
I know. But we all want the convertible.
But common sense won out. And I like my Nissan, but man, I wish the top came off of it.
Well, we can get a couple of saws, and that can be arranged. So, Kobe, we're wonderfully all over the place. What's happening at your alma mater?
This week, IU Cinema is back tonight, Friday night, with Life Itself at 7 o'clock.
The great Steve James documentary about film critic Roger Ebert. I know we'll be talking about that on No Limits this Tuesday at 1 o'clock on WFYI, so you can call or tweet or Facebook or email us comments if you want to talk movies with myself and Ed Johnson. But yeah, that is right now. That's my front runner for best film of the year. Now, granted, I'm saying this in August, so a lot could change in the next 4 months. But it's that good, that thorough a look, warts and all, about not just a fine critic and a fine writer, but a very complicated and engaging human being. That's Roger Ebert. Yes, sir.
So that's this weekend, Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock at IU Cinema. And then next week, starting Thursday the 14th through Saturday the 16th, Boyhood.
See, God, man, the Hoosier students got it good coming in for the next couple of weeks. And as the IMA continued their sold-out streak.
They did. Tonight, Clue is sold out. Next week, we have The Odd Couple, Mean Girls the week after that on the 22nd, which is already sold out. So if you're making plans for that,
go watch it at home.
Yeah. And then rounding out the Indianapolis Museum of Art Summer Night Film Series, The Godfather, on Friday, August 29th. Still tickets available.
Very cool. Did you see Clue in theaters?
I did.
And?
I enjoyed it.
As did I.
I thought it kind of got a bum rap with the critics. But, you know, it's a fun movie.
It is. And you have a lot of good people in it.
Right.
Playing with the material for exactly what it is.
How many different endings did you see?
I saw one.
Because I mean, they milled them all together.
Yeah, I know. When it came out on... what I'm trying to remember is when it came out on videotape, when it came out on VHS, were all three endings on that. Blu-ray, DVD, yes. Is it out on Blu-ray?
I don't know if it's on Blu-ray yet.
I know it's on DVD.
Yeah.
So I'll have to check that. So which ending did you see?
You know, it's been so long, I can't remember.
See, Kobe, this is what happens. Time goes on.
Time goes on.
You get older,
I mean,
you
I've things. Seen it several times since then, like on HBO.
You see all
and
three
whatnot,
endings,
but,
yeah.
But so I can't remember which one I saw in the theater.
Okay. But I think especially now, and I remember, yeah, you said it got a bum rap by the press in the mid 80s. I know it did. And I think especially nowadays, if you think about things like Transformers and Pirates of the Caribbean, and now on the other end, you have the Lego movie. Where, you know, product placement is, you know, runs rampant throughout.
Well, it's in the title of the movie.
It is in the title of the movie. But even something less, I always remember it was Bye Bye Love with Paul Reiser. I think it was Paul Reiser, Matthew Modine, and Randy Quaid.
Right.
And they all met at a McDonald's. They had their meetings inside a McDonald's, and it was brutally obvious for that. I mean, it was like Mac and Me almost.
So speaking, you know, of Paul Reiser movies, if they were to redo Diner now, would it probably take place at a Subway or something?
Never don't even think about remaking Diner. don't say that. That's a great film. And
I'm,
I saw it.
I'm sorry. I was going for the joke.
I know you were. And I saw it at a great time when I was 12 with my dad. This is one of the films that my dad and I drove down to Detroit to go see. And have I made you watch Diner, Kobe?
Nope.
I have to add that. It's a film from 1982, but it's set in 1959. So two different times. Two completely different times.
Whoa.
But it, you confused, bro? But it's and it was, even before The Outsiders, such a crop of young actors who just springboarded. You had Steve Guttenberg, mm-hmm. Paul Reiser, Daniel Stern, Kevin Bacon, Mickey Rourke, Ellen Barkin. Am I missing anybody? No. All in their very early stages. And I remember showing this film to Mrs. Soucy when we were dating. I'm sorry, courting. And it's the scene where Daniel Stern chews out Ellen Barkin over his record collection. The fact that they are he's got a special way. They're alphabetized, and then by year, and then by genre. And he chews her out because he found his James Brown record filed under the J's, and it was in the rock and roll section and not the R&B section.
Was she thinking?
Exactly. And then he's got a thing where, by the way, Kobe, don't do this. There's also a scene where he makes her pick the hit side of her record, and he could tell you what the flip side of what it was and what the color of the label was. Remember those guys? And he has this wonderful rant, and he ends it with, just don't play my records, ever. And Lynn leaned over to me and goes, you want to push my buttons? Use that word. And I never did. Okay, I did, but in jest, and she knew it. So anyway, Diner, great film. I guess we are all over the place. So, yeah, there's lots of stuff going on at the IMA. I want to go into the archives a little bit where you can buy a film online from, like, Warner Brothers or Sony or MGM, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for, like, $5.
Only in this case is probably 15. This is a film I'd not heard of. It's from 1969. I found it at a certain establishment, Half Price Books. And and it's called Once You Kiss a Stranger. From 1969, it stars Paul Burke and Carol Lindley. Do you remember? You should Google image Carol Lindley.
I
you know her,
Carol.
Kobe, you would say she is 60s pretty.
Yes,
because
he might knows what I'm talking about.
So it's and I forgot she played Jean Harlow in the mm-hmm. biopic Harlow back in 1965. So she's got the short hairdo, great opening scene where she comes out of the water in a green bikini. And as I'm watching the film, I didn't read the back of the box, and I probably should have. But Paul Burke plays a golf pro, and we find out that Carol Lindley is not all there mentally, and she's raging on the psychotic side, and she becomes obsessed with a pro golfer played by Paul Burke. Well, as within about 20 minutes, I realize it is a Malibu version of Strangers on a Train.
Ooh.
So he's got a competitive golfer he doesn't like. She has a psychiatrist who's almost going to have her institutionalized. She does her job. Now she wants the lover who she has slept and blackmailed. Wouldn't have that been interesting in the Hitchcock version, to kill for herself. So, yeah, if you needed a remake of Strangers on a Train without any of the charm or filmmaking of Alfred Hitchcock, there it is for you. And I watch it. But you can Google image Carol Lindley, and you probably should.
Often.
Yeah, it's actually
just as a reminder.
Yeah, it's kind of it's like, and in this film she kind of, her eyes remind me of Lee Remick, and she has the short combo. It's not as short as, say, Mia Farrow and Rosemary's Baby do.
But yeah. She's kind of in the same school as Sue Lyon. And
yeah, the kind of 60s pretty,
yeah.
Kobe. Blonde, straight hair. Peggy Lipton also out there. But I guess we don't have time, so I'll just do Chris Lloyd's bit. Going into Dead People We Like. Because we don't have time for dead people we don't like. If you're a horror film fan, you have seen her work. You have heard her scream. Actress Marilyn Burns died on Tuesday at the age of 65. Best known as the girl, one of the girls, I think the one who survives in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974.
Well, her career didn't, but...
No, she did. Yeah, that was her first film. She did. Then she was in... this TV movie of Helter Skelter from 1976, worked with Tobe Hooper once again in Eaten Alive, which was the weird bayou alligator creepy horror film. I believe she's tied to a bed in her slip. Google Ooh. Image. I read it on the internet. But yeah, films like Kiss Daddy Goodbye from 1981, Future Kill 1985. She does appear in as a patient in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, as well as Texas Chainsaw 3D from last year.
Still Texas.
Still chainsawing. And Butcher Boys from 2012. But if anything else, Marilyn Burns had her obit in the New York Times. So you had a picture of her from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the New York Times. Thank you for all the screams, Marilyn Burns. All right, folks, lives to word by. Words to live
Silent
by.
Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
If Abdul were here, I'd say thanks. Mike Perry, thanks for hanging out.
No problem.
And,
good to be back.
On behalf of Kobe and myself, apparently I am Professor Moriarty. More on that next week. As well as Matt Tully from The Star to talk about the movies of Elvis Presley next week. Go see a good movie. There's plenty of them out there. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. No Limits, Tuesday at 1 o'clock with Ed Johnson out of Nuvo.
We go on. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.